Welcome to the Holistic Wealth Podcast. I'm your host, Keisha Blair, wife, mother of three, author of Holistic Wealth, and founder of the Institute on Holistic Wealth. The show will showcase various experts in the key pillars of holistic wealth. Each week, we deliver the best information on how to become holistically wealthy and live your best life. Today, we have a very special guest with us. We have Dr. Laurie Brado, and she is a professor in the UBC Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology, where she holds a Canada Research Chair in Women's Sexual Health. She is also the Executive Director for the Women's Health Research Institute, one of only three institutes in Canada devoted to advancing research in women's health, and maintains an active practice as a registered psychologist. Dr. Brado was recently featured in the Netflix series, The Principles of Pleasure, and is the author of Better Sex Through Mindfulness, How Women Can Cultivate Desire, and the forthcoming The Better Sex Through Mindfulness Workbook, A Guide to Cultivating Desire. Laurie, thank you so much for being on the show. We're so happy to have you.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Okay, great. And so, I just wanted to start off because this is the very first episode that we've had so far on the podcast where we're talking about sexual health. But I just wanted to state just right up front that I think it's so important as a part of our physical or mental health or emotional health, and as a part of our holistic wealth portfolio. And of course, couples can do that together. So that's great. And so Laurie, just to start off, just to get your views on how important this topic is to our overall holistic wealth.
Yeah, it's such a great question to start out with, because sexual health is indeed a component of overall health. All of the different components, Keisha, that you pointed out, it contributes directly to our sense of well-being, our quality of life. And when sexual health goes awry, in other words, where there's problems in sexual functioning or sexual discord in a relationship, it can have quite a significant ripple effect on many different aspects of our health and well-being, mood, our thoughts, and our day-to-day functions. So I would probably summarize all of that to say it's a really core component of our general overall quality of life.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, we're living in a stressful time and we're constantly multitasking as women. I know you've written a book on mindfulness. Mindfulness is such a critical part of holistic wealth. In my book, it was an entire chapter. And so just before we get into the other topics, I just like to get from you in terms of the role mindfulness plays on a practical level, because women find it hard to compartmentalize and men are so much easier at compartmentalizing. Like, we're home from work and then we're thinking about the problems at work. We're thinking about money problems. We're thinking about what to cook for dinner. We're thinking about other things. Mm-hmm. What role does mindfulness play?
Yeah, I mean, my answer is going to sound so obvious and trite, but it truly is. I mean, when we look at people who describe really optimal sexual encounters, those people who talk about really enjoying their sexuality and have satisfying sexual encounters and orgasms, the details of what they're doing in the encounter differs across different people. But the very common thread is the fact that they are practicing being right there. They're practicing being in the present moment. They're letting all of the items on their to-do list to fade into the background. And it doesn't mean that they are ignoring them or deeming them unimportant, but rather in that moment, they are choosing to truly show up for their sexual encounter, whether it's sex with a partner or sex on their own. So mindfulness is really critical. And my research over the last two decades has really been focused on, first of all, how do we teach people mindfulness in a way that can improve their sexual function? And secondly, what are some of those tangible improvements in their sexuality and sex life that we see as a result of people practicing mindfulness?
And it's so critical to be in the present as with everything, right? Because sometimes we're constantly living in the past. We're thinking about past partners, past trauma, past illnesses. And there's so much on our plate. I'm just wondering about women who have undergone, and people in general, both men and women, who have undergone trauma of any kind. How can they have more fulfilling sex lives?
Really an important question, given just how prevalent the rates of sexual abuse, sexual trauma are. We know that as far as women go, or women identifying people, that 1 in 3 will report an experience of sexual abuse of some sort. We know that gender minority people, so trans women, non-binary people, or people of other ethnic and racial minority identities, that they actually face rates of trauma that are even higher than those staggering high rates. So unfortunately, very, very common. And there has been a lot of research that has looked at what happens to these people long after the trauma. Are they able to resume a healthy sex life? Are they not? What helps? What gets in the way? And the good news is that about half of them are able to kind of see no consequences to their sexual function and sexual arousal. The bad news, of course, is that half do continue to have negative experiences. In my clinical practice, I would say one of the most common things I see are particularly women who've had a history of sexual abuse. Now they find themselves in a healthy, consensual, happy relationship. But every time they go to engage in sexual activity, they become re-traumatized. They might dissociate. They might have flashbacks and memories of that past sexual assault or assaults. And so the work, of course, is how do we help that person be in the present moment, in their body today, in that moment with this partner, and let those memories and flashbacks subside. And so here is where we have done the research on whether mindfulness can be a tool to help people become resilient and move past those after effects of trauma. And the data are pretty promising. So in my practice, I rely quite heavily on mindfulness as a way of being present. And there's a way that we do it in a very slow, gradual way, rather than sort of all at once and just jumping into a sexual encounter. Rather, maybe the person practices low levels of arousal on their own while they practice mindfulness before gradually incorporating those skills into a partnered encounter. So yeah, mindfulness, again, a really important tool for helping people to be right there in the here and now.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And there are two things that are coming to mind as you're speaking. Number one, the Netflix series, The Principles of Pleasure, that talked about the orgasm gap and how wide that is for men and women. And it's huge. And also I'm thinking about, again, the trauma and sexual arousal. But I'm just wondering, how can we work to reduce that? And I know you mentioned mindfulness. And you know, the other thing, and sorry, I know I'm throwing something else in there because I don't want to forget, you know, I often talk about ancestral money blocks, right? And I was recently listening to your podcast episode with Glennon Doyle on her podcast. And you talked about these messages, you know, how we often talk about negative money messages passed down from generation to generation. I don't know if there's a term called ancestral sexual blocks, but yeah, how do we counter those messages, yeah, especially for young girls, women, young, yeah, women, those negative sexual blocks that get passed down and how women see themselves sexually?
First of all, we need to prevent them. And the best, yeah, way to prevent them, of course, is advocating for good, comprehensive, evidence-based sex education programs that are developmentally appropriate and that teach young children from the earliest possible age. And then obviously with each developmental stage, you layer on more information that, again, is developmentally appropriate. But, you know, a comprehensive sex education program does things such as teach the appropriate terms for genital anatomy. I mean, the number of teenagers that don't know the names for their proper anatomy. In fact, you mentioned, Keisha, the Principles of Pleasure series. One of the most common emails that I got from people was, oh my gosh, I didn't know that the vulva and the vagina were different. And these were from adults that were, yes, emailing me, right? So, yeah, so absolutely comprehensive education that is based on science and not based on fear-mongering, mm-hmm, absolutely critical to prevent many of the very, very common stereotypes and myths and misperceptions that people grow up with when it comes to their sexual health. Now, for people that miss that, which is probably most of us, you know, never got good comprehensive sex education as a kid, there's opportunities later on in life. I mean, there's an array of excellent books. There are excellent podcast interviews. There is, you know, there are Netflix series like The Principles of Pleasure, although we need many more out about that. That one was really focused on sexual inequities, and it was a bit more focused on women rather than men. But it's never too late to get good, accurate information about sex.
I'm just wondering, because we talked about trauma, and I just wanted to hone in on the healing part of trauma. You spoke about mindfulness, which is so critical. I think that's such a critical tool in the toolbox. And I'm just wondering, because at the Institute on Holistic Wealth, we also have a course, a certification in holistic healing. What do you think, in the context of holistic healing, are there any linkages there and any benefits in terms of women and their sexual function and sexual dysfunction?
As you mentioned, trauma can arise from so many different sources. And if you happen to be someone who has managed to escape the grips of sexual trauma, unfortunately, there are so many other traumas that people do face. Maybe it's, you know, the trauma of seeing a friend die, or financial trauma, or trauma from being ridiculed on social media, right? Cyberbullying, that sort of thing. So trauma is unfortunately really, really common. And the research really tells us that, first of all, people are resilient, that we sort of, from our evolutionary past, we have evolved in a way that has allowed us to encounter adversity and cope with adversity and grow from it. And, you know, from an evolutionary perspective, that gets programmed into our DNA in a way that passes on how to cope with adversity to our offspring and beyond. But the critical part, of course, is the coping part. And I think what happens to a lot of people is that trauma can lead them to avoid. It can lead many people into a deep, dark depression where they might lock themselves up and not have any contact with people who care about them, not have access to therapy for many reasons, including financial reasons or shame-based reasons, that they're not getting the help that might really be critical in their healing. But I can't stress enough just how important it is that people ask for help. If they think that they have experienced some kind of an abusive or traumatic or even very, very stressful experience in their life, because it doesn't just negatively impact our mind and brain, it can impact our whole physiology, right? It can be a risk factor for things like diabetes and heart disease and other ailments as well. So I really just want to normalize the asking for help. And that is hard for a lot of us to do. You know, we again want to feel like we're competent and able to do everything on our own, but sometimes asking for help is the best way of taking care of yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just wanted to go back to the whole notion of the holistic wealth portfolio again, because I know, like, I talk about that a lot. And I know for couples, it's often better when we're talking about sex and relationships to come together to do this as one and with goals that are aligned. And so I'm just wondering, from a practical standpoint with a couple, how can they practically plan to be more intentional? Because I always say holistic wealth is also being intentional by design. How can they take practical steps to integrate this? And I know we mentioned your workbook, and how can they take practical steps? Is it that they should be, you know, we also talk about scheduling money date nights. Should they be scheduling sex? Is there a benefit?
Yeah.
And should this be worked in? I mean, how do they, you know, communicate well and put this as a part of a portfolio for goals in terms of what they want their sex life to look like, or how they want to evolve as a couple? Or is that something that they can practically do? And how could they attempt to do that within the context of their portfolio?
Yeah. So yes to every question that you asked. We do want to normalize planning and scheduling sexual encounters. There are very few things in our life that happen unplanned. And especially if it's something that's important to you, it simply will not happen if it's not planned, or it will get relegated to the very end of the day when our emotional and physical gas tanks are empty. So planning sex can be fun. It can be sexy. It can be an opportunity to fantasize in your mind ahead of time. And I think it's such an important and healthy thing for couples to do. Another thing that couples can do is they can talk about sexuality more outside of the bedroom. So, you know, the bedroom should be the place where you put words into action. But if there's discussions ahead of time, such as, especially if one person has a struggle, such as, let's say, sexual pain, which is really common in women. 1 in 5 women do experience pain with any kind of vaginal penetration. Well, that will be something that you want to talk about before you are in the sexual encounter. Are there other kinds of sexual activities that are non-painful that we can engage in? And if we don't know what those are, how do we find out about them? Maybe there's a book we want to read together. Maybe there's a workshop we want to go to. So talking about sex outside of the bedroom is really, really helpful. In fact, the big research studies indicate that couples who engage in sexual communication, basically what that means is that they talk about sex with each other, they are far more likely to be sexually satisfied in the long term. It's one of the biggest predictors of long-term sexual satisfaction is, do you talk to your partner about sexual activity? And then, of course, talking about it afterwards. How was that for you? How did you feel? Was it what you expected? Would you want to do something different next time? What's coming up for you? So all of those things can be really important ways of not just experiencing and appreciating the sex you're having, but also planning for better sex in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm thinking about, you know, your workbook in terms of cultivating desire and how women can do that. And I'm also thinking about it from the lens with which you mentioned a while ago about the pre-planning and what we can do. And so I often, you know, it's so funny. I train my students on cultivating a new money story. And this is something that is so critical in terms of, like, you know, self-awareness and how you advocate for yourself in terms of your money. And I want women to start thinking about this in terms of their sexual lives. So how do I rewrite that story in terms of my sexuality? And how do I use that to then become more self-aware and to advocate for myself inside and outside of the bedroom? And I just wanted to get your thoughts on that, just in terms of practical ways then that women can do that.
Yeah, great. I mean, I'm a big fan of journaling or any kind of, you know, diary that people might take. In the groups that I run, and we've been running these groups, mindfulness-based groups for people with sexual concerns for years now. And one of the things we do in the very first session is we ask people to go home and write a letter to themselves. What does it mean to them to be the sexual person that they are right now?
Right.
And what is their hope for themselves at the end of the program, the 8 weeks that they spend with us? And so it's written in first person perspective. And so they're really speaking to themselves. And because they're handwriting it, it's an opportunity for them to really contemplate, who am I as a sexual person?
Yeah.
And interestingly, when people sit down to do that, they realize that some of the specifics around number of orgasms or frequency of sex really doesn't matter. What matters more is their feelings about themselves as a sexual person. So what's their global sense of sexual esteem? When they close their eyes and they imagine who they are as a sexual person, what does that person look like? So it's a really great exercise, very practical. Anyone can do it.
This is amazing in terms of how women and men can start to think, as you mentioned, in global terms about who they are, their sexual identity. Because the other thing that I often talk about is knowing your financial identity and how that can create awareness, right? And how we can start to advocate for ourselves in terms of money. And I think, you know, just listening to you a while ago, it just brought back that to me in terms of our sexual identities. And so it's unbelievable. You know, how you mentioned a while ago, how you've gotten so many emails, right, from that Netflix series.
Yeah.
And it's brought back so much to you in terms of sex ed and what we teach. And it's so amazing that a lot of this discussion, a lot of this that we're talking about does not begin in schools. Isn't that unbelievable? Like, I don't know what else you think should be in there, but I'm thinking, wow, like all of this is like post, like,
yeah,
probably for most of us post marriage.
Yeah, for sure. Or much later on in life. And, and yet when we look at what age young people start engaging in sexual activity, I mean, I can assure you it's not in their 30s.
Right.
It's not in their 20s. It's, yes, you know, for a lot of them, it's in their late teens. And so they are, unfortunately, either going into those experiences with no sex ed, or their sex ed comes from pornography or, you know, whatever is very easily accessible on their iPhones, and which is not comprehensive sex education, although maybe that's an idea, is that we start delivering comprehensive sex ed through TikTok. Maybe then young people will have a bit more information. So we need to start at an earlier age. It is never too late to get it at some point. And it's one of the most important things we can do to cultivate healthy sexual development in life.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, Laurie, as I mentioned just prior to your response, I developed this financial identities quiz based on holistic wealth. After I became widowed, I just thought, wow, if many more women just, you know, knew about this or just were aware, can you imagine how much further we could be? And so I know you took the quiz and I'd love to hear your thoughts on it because, and of course, you know, in your field and in your profession and also dealing with in your clinical practice, seeing, you know, the alignment and the causality between money problems and sex problems. I'm sure that you have even more insights because I think they're so intertwined, especially when the economy, the financial problems are often number one, and they're also up there with health problems, right? For most people, it's just those two at the top. So we would love to hear your insights, your quiz results, and any other insights you have.
Yeah. Well, I was a minimalist and I sort of chuckled at that, but in part because it's quite different from my husband. He's not a minimalist. Yeah. He's a risk taker, you know, high risk, high reward.
Right.
And I'm sort of satisfied with, you know, simple things, what we have. I still have clothing from many, many years ago. And my view is always if it's not broke, you know, don't fix it. It made me also think about how mindfulness fits in there. And, you know, mindfulness as a practice is really quite simple. And it boils down to present moment, non-judgmental awareness. It's about bringing your attention non-judgmentally into the here and now. And you could say it's the most minimal of minimalist practices. Not easy to do though. And it, in part, it's because our mind is torn into so many directions. So maybe it's no surprise that my values around managing finances and sort of my life in general and my relationships have led me to mindfulness and have led me to researching mindfulness as a tool in sexuality. We don't need to overcomplicate things, is my view. We can do a lot with the things that we have. And mindfulness is in our back pocket. It's something we're all born with, we all have, we can draw from. It might be dusty because it gets layered with our to-do list, but we can dust off the layers on top of it and bring it to the surface and use it. So yeah, that was sort of how I saw that connection between my profile as a minimalist and my love of and practice of mindfulness in life, but also as a tool to promote sexual wellness.
Absolutely. And I think we're similar because my husband is a minimalist too, and I'm a risk taker. So we're very similar that way. And it's unbelievable. And I don't know, Laurie, what you've seen in your practice since COVID. I don't know how it's impacted our sexual behavior, but I wanted to ask you that before you go and kind of like any new research on sex. And of course, there's so many couples who go through periodic sexual droughts too, right? Whether COVID or lockdown prior to that too. And so I just wanted to get from you, you know, what you've seen.
Yeah. We've also done a large research study on this where we kind of jumped on the COVID research bandwagon by April 2020 and followed people, large sample of people through different phases of the pandemic lockdown. And one of the really striking things we found was that there were a lot of parts of sexuality that were negatively impacted. So desire for sex, frequency of sex, having sexual difficulties, all of those things were impacted more so if you lived with a partner than if your partner didn't live with you. And here's where, you know, you're sort of cooped up in a stressful environment and you don't have the usual escapes and luxuries and indulgences like travel and seeing friends and going to the theater. And so for a lot of those couples, it really took a negative toll on their sex life. And we then followed them through the pandemic loosening measures. And some of them bounced back to pre-pandemic levels as far as sex goes, but a lot of them didn't. And I think it's going to be one of these lingering unintended consequences of the pandemic is people's mental health really suffered during that period of time. Women more so than men. We did a separate, very large study in the province of British Columbia and found that women were disproportionately negatively impacted through COVID and afterwards. And it's because, you know, women were far more likely to assume multiple roles. You know, they were working full time and they were homeschooling and they were kind of figuring out COVID tests and COVID vaccines and getting the safety information. And so I think it's going to be some time before we see resumption of normal way of life again, even though day to day, you know, you may not see too many remnants of COVID, but emotionally we still do. So in my practice, I definitely see that mirrored. I'm seeing a lot of couples who went through a really significant, stressful period of time. Maybe they lost a person to COVID.
Yes.
And that's been negatively impacting their relationship. So yeah, we need to invest more in resources to really help people and help couples get through this period of time so that we can hopefully get back to normal.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you're talking again, I'm thinking about holistic wealth and how everything is so intertwined. Mm-hmm. And how everything just affects the other in terms of our lives or mental health or physical health and all of that. So, Lori, it was so great having you on the show. Can you tell our listeners where to find you? Social media and your website?
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, thanks for a great conversation, Keisha. On Twitter, I'm at Dr. Lori Brado, and my website is loribrado.com. Thanks for mentioning my book, Better Sex Through Mindfulness. And the workbook is due to come out in October 2022. And the workbook is really intended to walk people through the exercises, the exact same exercises that we do in our groups. And my research website, so if people are interested in participating in our research, it's bradolab.com.
Amazing. And thank you once again, Lori. This was amazing. I loved our conversation. And thanks again for joining us.
Thank you so much. All the best, Keisha.
Thank you for joining us this week on Holistic Wealth with Keisha Blair. Make sure to visit our website, keishablair.com, where you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Spotify, or via RSS so you will never miss a show. While you're at it, if you found value in this show, we'd appreciate a rating on iTunes, or if you simply tell a friend about the show, that would help us out too. Are you a member of the Institute on Holistic Wealth? If not, what are you waiting for? Go to instituteonholisticwealth.com/memberships to choose your membership plan and join. As a member, you get so many perks. Free worksheets, advice, coaching, and a member's workshop to design an intentionally designed life. You need to figure out your life purpose? Take the Build Your Life Purpose Portfolio online self-paced course. You're struggling with all your money decisions? Take the free financial identities quiz and then take the course. You recently had a breakup, job loss, or experienced the death of a loved one? Take the holistic healing course. You need an overall plan to achieve holistic wealth? We will help you figure out your holistic wealth blueprint. And of course, if you want to start making money by helping others achieve holistic wealth, become a certified holistic wealth consultant. Regardless of what career you've got, the Institute will show you how to increase your income and walk in your purpose. The sooner you join, the sooner you start to achieve a more holistically wealthy lifestyle. And you're going to want to stay for a very long time. So go to instituteonholisticwealth.com/memberships to join. If you haven't read the book yet, pick up a copy of the award-winning, best-selling Holistic Wealth 32 Life Lessons to help you find purpose, prosperity, and happiness.